Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Partly Political Broadcast, the comedy politics podcast that would tell it like it is, but doesn't quite know how to do a bored screen. This is episode 159, I'm Tin and Duyeb, and how do you solve a problem like wanting to leave the EU but promising there'll be no physical Irish border? Well, according to Prime Minister and melting Sasquatch Boris Johnson, you fulfil your promise by having two physical borders instead. Ingenious idea. I mean, how can anyone organise sectarian violence at the dividing line if they don't know which one to meet at? I'm not sure why people haven't operated this policy before. I mean, concerned about that escaped murderer lurking in your area? It's okay, we've released another 5 of them, so you won't waste your time looking everywhere for the one you recognise from the news. Aware that the last thing your garden needs is a hidden landmine? Well, don't fret, we've put 500 of the things in there, so your fear of death will be spread out till it's so thin it's almost non-existent. Or maybe I've just got all of this wrong, and Johnson is actually planning to add one more border to his alternative backstop proposal, working on the comedy rule of three. I mean, sure, there's anger at the first border check, confusion at the second, but then there'll be laughter at the sheer gall of the third. And then, hey, why stop there? Why not have 45 borders so that people crossing between Northern Ireland and the Republic laugh at the third one, but then become annoyed by the seventh, but then suddenly are in hysterical fits of giggles by number 28? The full backstop alternative plan is to make Northern Ireland neither like the UK or the EU, but a weird sort of in-between land, a kind of trading purgatory, if you will, or an entire nation of airport departure land, but without the duty-free. So, Northern Ireland, who've stated they wanted the same as the UK, won't get that, but also won't get the EU membership benefits either, and will now have two whacking great big borders round it, which Boris is calling a broad landing zone, something you'd only need if you know there's a large chance you're going to miss the runway when you nosedive. When I worked in a job in Camden Council some years ago, everyone in the office took it in turns to make the tea for everyone else, and I realised early on that if I made really bad tea that either stewed far too long or nowhere near enough, then they stopped asking me to do it, and I would instead always receive tea while checking the internet on my computer instead of doing any work. This, I fear, is Boris Johnson's tactic with his attempts at a Brexit deal, which isn't the same as tea because people care about tea so much that I think the British would actually make an effort to ensure it's done properly despite divisions. I wonder if Boris thinks that if he just keeps bringing them shit idea after shit idea, then maybe the EU will just go, oh, for fuck's sake, it's easier if you go away and we just sort it out ourselves, or potentially just scrap it, ignore you and ask you not to call again. You can tell this might be the plan, not because Johnson specialises in being a bullshitter in a china shop, but also because he's called this alternative backstop a genuine attempt to bridge a chasm. Well, we all know how he fares with bridge plans. I mean, honestly, he's wasted so much money and time on bridges now, I'm amazed his name isn't Piers. The European Union say they'll decide by the end of the week whether a new Brexit deal is possible, because by that point they'll have finally stopped laughing and sending each other memes about how maybe the best way to ensure no one has to put up with a Boris Johnson ever again is to clone him so there's two Boris Johnsons. The Prime Minister says a deal will totally happen if the EU are willing, which is a more consensual stance to making relationships than we're used to from Boris. Of course, what he actually means is that whatever happens will somehow be the EU's fault if they say no, which again does fit with recent allegations. Johnson's asked the EU to thrash out their objections to his plans, saying that they hadn't given specific criticism, but it's hard to be specific, isn't it, when all of it's shit. A leaked memo showed that senior government aides have ordered Conservatives to call the EU crazy if they reject the multi-border approach. Because that's what the Conservative Party is now, a cheap American carpet superstore with deals you'd be crazy to miss, but if you don't miss them, you've likely taken on something that was haphazardly put together and extremely prone to fire. Which does actually fit with what the UK could become, as a leaked document from the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs has warned that in order to get decent trade deals from the US post-Brexit, the UK will have to relax its rules governing animal welfare and pesticide levels on food. But on the plus side, if there's also big delays in getting medicines, being 50% extra hormones and 50% brain spray should destroy absolutely everything in our system, including germs and our internal organs. Maybe that's the combination they were handing out at the end of the Conservative conference last week, as how else do you explain Home Secretary and Westminster's Carmelita spat, Priti Patel, saying that this daughter of immigrants needs no lectures from the North London metropolitan liberal elite? Which is odd, as she was born in Islington, in North London, by parents who were born in Harrow, in, yes again, North London. But then maybe Priti Patel is just openly admitting that even she doesn't listen to her own nonsensical babble. Some have said that actually saying North London metropolitan liberal elite is an anti-Semitic slur, but I guess her colleague, Chancellor and TV's bod, Sajid Javid, did say the day before that they were the real party of Labour. Patel said that the UK would be adopting an Australian point-style immigration system, which based on Aussie rules, I think means we get the most if we continue to kick ourselves without anyone else's help. If, as Patel says, it'll encourage only the brightest and the best to come to the UK for work, does that mean most of the government will be encouraged to leave so we can get some decent foreign workers in there instead? It's so weird that anyone would announce ending the free movement of people once and for all without then adding an evil laugh and pointing a laser at a large building or the sun. But maybe that's because Priti Patel can't work out if she wants to be a baddie or some sort of anti-hero, as she told the conference that to criminals, she simply says, "We're coming for you." Which really sounds like she just wants to dress up as Batman for a bit and then run around at night. I suppose it could also mean that she'll be hitting up those criminals to see if they'll join the party, especially as its leader might be joining those deemed as illegal very, very soon. Yes, Johnson's leadership speech was, as predicted, pointless waffle, talking about how we sell Jason Donovan CDs to North Korea, which, if that's true, might explain why they're so hostile to everyone and keep their borders closed. He said an Oxfordshire science lab is on the verge of creating commercially viable nuclear fusion reactors, which scientists have said is completely wrong and will take at least 30 to 40 years, though maybe that explains Johnson's Get Brexit Done message if he thinks 4 decades is round the corner. He said that the public have more say over I'm a Celebrity than they do the House of Commons, which is an odd statement to make when voters' choices in both are mainly to ensure that someone will have to eat insects eventually in order to survive. But none of that, nor a weird incident involving his aides arguing over giving Johnson a coffee, saying no disposable cups, though no one's sure if that's for the environmental message or just that no one trusts Boris not to spill things on himself. None of those detracted from the fact that the Prime Minister may be a big old crim-crim. When interviewed, US tech entrepreneur and what if Lucy Davis was soulless, Jennifer R. Curie, refused to answer any questions on whether or not her and Johnson were banging when he gave her a shit ton of public cash during his time as London Mayor. When asked if Johnson ever used the pole dancing pole in her living room, she also declined to answer, which, to be honest, I was super pleased about, as no one wants the image of what looks like a flesh beanbag trying to attend to a fire emergency embedded in their head for life. Whether or not they were together is not the important bit anyway, but more if Johnson and Arcuri's relationship meant that she inappropriately got money to help her business, or if it was just hush money so that she wouldn't release pictures of Johnson trying to do a teddy pike and looking like someone who's dangerously undercooked a Kirby shish kebab. Then there's the Benn Act that insists the Prime Minister write to the EU to ask for an Article 50 extension if a deal hasn't been agreed on by October the 19th, something that Number 10 said the government would abide by, only for hours later Johnson to tweet, "New deal or no deal, no delay," as though he'd happily break the law all the while speaking like a rejected Alice in Wonderland character. Various Number 10 sources have suggested the government have found a loophole to avoid being tied to the Benn Act, but based on all the legal experts saying they definitely haven't, I'm thinking the PM's top three ideas include sending a separate follow-up letter that simply says, "Not," blaming the first letter on his evil doppelganger Joris Bonson, and pretending autocorrect changed the words last minute and they actually asked for a tickle fit extension. I mean, I've no idea what it is, but Johnson might have got one from Jennifer R. Curie's house and paid her £100,000 for it. Again, we enter another week where everyone is clueless as to what might happen, and there is talk that the government will prorogue Parliament again, despite being deemed unlawful last time. And Boris apparently has dared the Queen to sack him. Now, I don't think she would, but hopefully she might instead insist that Philip drive him around for a bit, and then he can see what it's like to crash out against all advice. In other news, Labour say they won't back a government of national unity unless party leader and personified Psy, Jeremy Corbyn, leads it, despite his parliamentary party saying that they want a referendum before an election, which he doesn't. Meanwhile, the Lib Dems, who avidly state they don't want a no deal, won't join a government of national unity if Jeremy Corbyn leads it, as apparently they prefer a no deal to that. I mean, it really says something about how low the possibilities are of pulling a divided country together when there'd be more cohesion between the same ends of two massive magnets. It has been touted that other leaders of a government of national unity could be Narnia resident Speaker John Bercow, because nothing says unity like a man who's had several accusations of bullying made against him. It's been proposed that Bercow could lead a cabinet of all talents, which sounds like the world's most disappointing Harry Potter book, and includes such MPs as deflated Mr. Blobby, Ken Clark, and what if Isha did a painting of a nose, Vince Cable? Potentially, I guess, with the aim of boring people to a better Brexit. Meanwhile, the Lib Dems have been using profiling on every voter in the country to give them a score and work out specific characteristics. I'd really like to check mine, as I'm sure it's a very low number, with my main strength being eye-rolling and telling people who profile me to fuck right off. The party have denied that it's being used to target social media ads and say instead it's just to save weary voters from unwelcome canvassing. So I guess it'll mostly encourage Lib Dem candidates to stay at home a lot during the next election. Conservative MP and what if Samwise Gamgee was a racist, Sir Desmond Swain, wrote a blog boasting about how he'd blacked up to dress up as James Brown for a fancy dress party and said it was fun, insisting that he'd only not do it again because it was hard to wash off. I'm not sure if he's referring to the makeup or the horrific inherent bigotry. The Conservative Party have done absolutely nothing about it, even though it's now been 6 days since Swain posted the blog with pictures. So in the words of the late, great James Brown, who Swain did not deserve to imitate, please, please, please kick him the fuck out of the party. Okay, James Brown didn't sing the last bit, but I'm pretty sure he would have. Former Prime Minister and current carbonite sculptor Theresa May says she has no regrets over her career and that she had a fantastic time as Prime Minister. Now, before you criticise those comments, one definition of fantastic is that it means imaginative or fanciful and remote from reality. So, yeah, I guess that's fair. And lastly, tons of British fruit has gone to waste due to a lack of seasonal workers to harvest it, thanks to Brexit fears. Further proof, the government definitely can't cherry-pick the Brexit they want. Labour MP and someone who I'm certain I'll one day see fronting a band from 1987 on Top of the Pops 2, but looking exactly as she does now, Stella Creasy, is going to become the first MP to get a low-cum replacement while she's on maternity leave. Should make a nice balance for our Prime Minister, who, according to most stories, is completely cum. And former Conservative MP and walking conglomerate charity advert Rory Stewart is standing down as an MP in order to run for London Mayor. I'm not sure that what London is looking for is a rich, pro-austerity, eaten-educated, white, middle-aged country lad, but I do look forward to his campaign mostly consisting of him lurking around Kew Gardens in a mat like a flasher and getting arrested. Stewart said on Channel 4 News that his favourite pub was not a pub, but Pret a Manger, which really makes him sound like an idiot, as it takes a lot of effort to get pissed in a Pret a Manger, plus they kick you out if you vom on the hot breakfast section. I should know. Still, it's that sort of weird, totally unconnected insight that means up against Sadiq Khan and the others, it's likely Rory Stewart has just given his career a rap that wasn't anywhere near as satisfying as he'd have expected for the cost. Oh, and former Conservative MP and Change UK MP and Independent MP and the sort of person who would use a professional photo shoot pic for their driving licence, Heidi Allen, has joined the Lib Dems, which is a shock, but mostly because I thought she already had done ages and ages ago. Hey, 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 Parpol Broads, thank you for tuning in. And look, I'm not going to lie, this week's podcast is a brief old show, as I am on solo parent duty this week, and my daughter has just taken nearly 3 hours to put down for sleep. And I would scream, but it would probably just wake her up again, which would be the worst case scenario. And also, it would deafen all of you, so I'm not going to do it. What it does mean, and I apologise for this really, but it means this admin ramble is super short. It means the podcast is super short. There's no sharp gags on any of the Trump stuff, because there's too much of it. And frankly, if he trusted Boris and the Ukrainian comedian for advice on his rivals, he has clearly lost it, as you'd get better, more coherent info yelling into a well. Also, there's nothing on the Extinction Rebellion lot this week, even though there should be, but solidarity and top work from them. Hopefully, they'll just appreciate that I'm saving the energy. And there's about five other things I forgot to talk about this week, because my brain has absolutely melted having to sing nursery rhymes on end for about 3 hours. Oh my God, it was exhausting. There's also no middle bit either, which was going to be Brexit fallout, but let's face it, nothing has actually happened again. So maybe just listen to a repeat from a few weeks ago. Sorry, but also not sorry. It's entirely Minnie Duyeb's fault, and feel free to write her hate mail about it, as she can't read, and it'll mostly just make feel better, really. So do it. So very quickly for this bit, some things. The live podcast gig, which my daughter won't be at, so it will run to time, is still happening, even if it isn't Brexit that week, or it might be Brexit, or it might half be Brexit, who actually knows. 29th of October at 2 North Down in King's Cross, there is a lineup and everything. It will be fun. Just grab tickets from 2northdown.com or the link in this pod blurb. Please come, I have some very fun things planned. Secondly, my brother, whose music I steal for this show, The Last Skeptic, has a new track out called Scumbag Anthem, and it's great. Go grab it from Music Places, and his album will be out at the end of November. And thirdly, I've been on a podcast that isn't this one, Gasp and Shock, which is the Desert Island Dicks podcast, and it's brilliant. And I talk about the three people, I mean, not necessarily my episode, just all of it is brilliant. The Richard Herring episode, where he mainly slagged off Bing, was a proper delight. On my episode, I talk about the three people I'd least like to be trapped on a desert island with. My choices will be fairly unsurprising if you're a regular listener to this show, but do check it out. And lastly, I mentioned it a few weeks ago, but bit rubbish really, but the way in which the podcast platform I am on, Acast, you are brilliant, but the way that they measure podcast listens has now changed, which means immediately, in terms of numbers, several hundred of you have just vanished from the stats. I mean, I'm hoping you're still there physically and it isn't like The Leftovers or something, or like sort of, you know, Infinity War. I'm hoping you're still there in reality. It's all to do with platforms and times listened, and supposedly it's good for tackling bots and helping advertisers. But what it means for me is that the pittance I earn for the show is even less than pittance now, and all the podcast charts mark it even lower and all that sort of nonsense. So if you have the time and the want to tell people about this podcast and get them listening, please do. Maybe not this episode, who knows. And if you're a proper champ and fancy giving it a review, please do that, because it does really help. And if you want to help me, I don't know, afford to maybe get childcare in or soundproof my room so I can't hear my daughter if she won't sleep, or, you know, just buy Valium, but for me, then please donate to the Ko-fi ko-fi.com/parpolbro site or patreon.com/parpolbro, as genuinely it really fucking helps. What is on this week's show is an interview with the brilliant Ruth Ibegbuna, who started the Roots Programme, a wonderful initiative to actually bring people together, as in, you know, sort of get on with each other, not just go all Fight Club or anything, because that wouldn't be helpful. Normal service on this podcast will resume next week, I promise, but until then, have this, which is genuinely good. Before June 23rd, 2016, it is safe to say that the only thing that really divided British people was Marmite. Oh, and class, ethnicity, religion, and garden hedge disputes, but really, yeah, it was mostly Marmite, wasn't it? But the Brexit result and the ensuing 3 years of nothing happening loudly brought in new divides and largely exacerbated old ones, meaning that your Marmite preference pales into significance compared to whether you're Leave or Remain, a baby boomer who bought all the homes, or a millennial who supposedly bought all the avocados, but come on, let's face it, if you can't afford to live anywhere, you may as well enjoy some tasty green snacks. And then there's the elites versus the elites who say they aren't the elites, the people who think they're British versus the people who are British but aren't sure they want to be anymore, people who quote tweet versus people who tag the names in other people you're subtweeting in a reply to yourself, everyone who likes the Joker movie versus people who've had sex, Slytherin versus Gryffindor, all the classic political divides plus the divides within their own parties and more. And I mean, if the phrase "United we stand, divided we fall" is true, then right now Britain is doing a mass replication of Radiohead's video for Just and refusing to stop once the track has ended. But what can be done about it? Well, surely a sensible way would be to work on a Brexit solution that actually listens to everyone and finds a middle ground, then puts in place a number of funds and projects that could bring people together. But, you know, with newspapers calling people traitors, politicians still using words like surrender, MPs like Constantine and Fungus the bogeyman, Marc Francois, stomping around with a pan on his head carrying a large stick that he found that looks like a gun and screaming that this is a war, and the Prime Minister dismissing the violent murder of Joe Cox with Dickensian disregard, and Twitter full of people saying everyone but them is stupid, where do you even begin to heal that rift? I mean, yes, you're right. Maybe we should have another Olympics. But something needs to happen sooner for everyone's sake. Luckily, there are people that have taken it into their own hands to make others realise that we have more in common than divides us, excluding Marmite, obviously. And this week I spoke to Ruth Ibegbuna, who started up the Roots Programme, an initiative that aims to bring people together from different walks of life and have them, well, talk in order to understand their differences and, more importantly, work out their similarities. I love the sound of this project, and I was so pleased Ruth was up for a chat to tell me all about it. They're currently fundraising to get the project further, as you'll hear in our chat, but if you can, do check out the GoFundMe link that I'll pop later in the show and in all the show notes. A very quick one of these, though. Sorry.
Excuses, excuses!
Slightly muffly audio this week because sometimes phones are shit. Yeah, take that, Alexander Graham Bell. Alexander Graham Bellin, more like. Anyway, I've made it as unmuffly as possible, and it does get better after the first minute or so, and it's definitely worth sticking with, as Ruth told me all about what has caused these divides, how to heal them, and exactly what they do in the Roots programme. Oh, and it really doesn't matter if you don't like Marmite, because, hey, it leaves more for me. Here's Ruth. Hi, Ruth. It's great to talk to you today. And the Roots programme sounds very, very timely indeed. I wondered if you could start by just telling us a bit about it and why you started it.
OK, well, good morning. The reason we started Roots was, I suppose, it was linked to Brexit. I was interested in issues of division in the UK way before Brexit, but Brexit really highlighted it. And I was living in a very working class area of Stockport, and I woke up the morning after the result, and the men who lived across the road were kind of dancing in the road doing the conga, and shouting Happy Independence Day to people as we were walking the kids to school. And I tell that story because people have not seen that, and I've not seen that on the news. And it was a day of absolute jubilation where I missed real jubilation. And then a few days later, I was doing my job as a CEO, and I was in London, and I was talking about the country, and I was really kind of heckled quite badly about the fact that I work in working class communities in the north, and people were saying that some people are too stupid to vote and the vote should be removed from some people. And I just thought, wow, you know, here you've got two groups of people who probably don't know each other very well, and they're pretty hostile towards each other, and just kind of what can we do to bring people in UK who will never meet closer together.
Wow, it's two completely polar opposites. And I think that's something that Brexit's really highlighted, hasn't it? That there are definitely people in Britain that don't understand each other.
Don't understand each other, don't know each other, have never been to the areas. I mean, for me, Britain's a tiny place, right? You know, like, I am a very curious person. I'm the kind of person that's like, I wonder what Gloucester's like. I went to Gloucester and I'll just go there and have a look and go, all right, I like Gloucester, fair enough. But I think it's quite easy in the UK for us to get around and see more than the area in which we live and know more about people. But we're just so polarised, and people don't necessarily understand the kind of trials and tribulations and challenges of people in other areas of the country, or even their kind of motivations for doing what they've done.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Cause I do for stand-up comedy. I've travelled around the country for years, and it's always interesting saying to people, like, oh, you know, I was in Birmingham this week and I was in Sheffield, and they think, oh my goodness, that's miles away. It's really not. It's really not that far at all.
It's not. Well, my family are all Londoners. My parents are both Londoners. I'm from a long line of Londoners, and then they came up north and had me. And so I'm just like token Northerner in a sea of London in their booners. So I've just always had that thing about, you know, London's been like my second home. I've always spent a lot of time there. I'm there every week. So I've got a very relaxed sense of London and being from the north. But I think that's not necessarily a two-way thing, and I don't think it's something that's replicated a lot.
So the Roots programme, how do you begin to bring people together? What are you doing within the programme that will start fixing this?
Well, I think we were just overwhelmed with the scale of kind of the challenges at the moment in the UK. So in the end, it's like, right, what little things can we do with the Roots programme? And the first thing we decided was to start having cultural exchanges of people from very different kind of socioeconomic, geographic, political backgrounds who would come and spend time with each other, visit each other's houses, meet each other's families, cook a meal together, talk about their priorities, show people where they live, what they love about where they live, what's the challenge in where they live, and then a month later to invite that other person back. So we're focusing first of all on kind of London versus the rest of the country, and I'm using versus in quotation marks, but the idea that people will come out of London and will spend time, whether it's in the Welsh Valleys or whether or not it's in parts of Yorkshire or whether it's in part of Manchester, meet those families, and then a month later invite those people back to see them. And we're also running a concurrent programme that's about state and private schools, because for me as an ex-teacher, that's absolutely crucial, that we get those kids who are actually studying in top public schools to understand that there are many people in this country who live very differently to them, who also have skills and talent, and to get them to have exchanges with them and to see what state education is like and how other young people live.
Yeah, that's very important. Also, kids are so... they find it a lot easier to kind of understand and accept other people and be open to other people thinking differently. And it sort of always feels like if you start there, then they'll grow up to kind of continue with those values.
Well, yeah, and I think part of the mess that we're in as a country is because we've got leadership, and I'm not even just talking about kind of the current Prime Minister, et cetera, but I think a lot of our political leaders don't have that kind of empathy and understanding and awareness beyond their circle. And we don't have enough leaders who've come from kind of council estates or have come from different parts of the country and state educated young people. And I think it's really important that we develop the leadership of those young people as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so in terms of the grown-ups that you're dealing with, the more difficult ones as opposed to children, how are you getting them together? What does the actual programme involve? Like, how does it work out? Is it meetings? Is it kind of big groups of people?
So it's individual. Yeah. So it's the way it starts off is people nominate themselves. And it's more like that I'll chase them down with an email and begging them to join the programme, and then they're kind of hooked. But they nominate themselves onto the programme, usually with a great sense of trepidation. They are then paired up in a kind of X Factor style with an appropriate pairing somewhere else in the country. We then introduce them by phone, by Skype, and then they have their first exchange where one person visits the other. It's quite relaxed. It's a sense of there's 5 hours. There's certain things they've got to do in that 5 hours. They don't have to talk about Brexit. They can talk about their community. They can talk about their families. And then afterwards, we ask them to go back and reflect on what did they see in that person's life that surprised them? What was different? What did it make them feel about their own lives? And then a month later, the whole process is reversed. So they will then become the host. And then a month after that, we're hosting Vision Days, where we get all the people who've been for exchanges together, and we ask them about kind of what did you see that you liked or didn't like, what did it tell you about the way you live your life, and then work together as a group to say what kind of UK do we want to see, are we happy with what we've got, how do we want it to be different, if we're going to get to that place, what will I have to give up or do differently in my own life to get there, and then we're getting people to make a pledge of difference in terms of if we're going to get to a UK that feels a bit more united and compassionate.
That's brilliant. I've been looking at something recently called Participatory Futures, which is all about getting people involved in the idea of what their own future could be and what they'd like to see in a hopeful future. You know, I've seen that or been reading about how that makes a difference in how people think. And obviously this is a pilot. You're currently in your pilot phase of this, but have you noticed, you know, already are people being more hopeful? How are they connecting? Is there anything that you're kind of already seeing from these people coming together?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the first thing that's come through is people become very reflective about their own lives. And you immediately get some guilt from those who maybe are more advantaged or more privileged, feeling, oh God, you know, I've got all this privilege. What have I done with it? Have I been wasting my time? Should I be doing more? Because they're being paired with people who may be doing more in their community. But then it's about, okay, but you know, you've got that privilege, you've got more money, that's fine, you know, like what are you doing with your time, what are your values, what are your ethics, how are you connecting beyond your bubble? So I think it's provoking people to be quite reflective about their choices, and also maybe to be far more aware and respectful of those who've got very different lives for themselves. And what we found at the moment is there are so many people who feel quite hopeless about the state of the UK that people are wanting to do this because it's more for kind of I need to feel like I'm doing something rather than just sitting back and consuming news and feeling overwhelmed. At least if I'm taking part in a route exchange, I can say that I'm trialing something small, but I'm trying something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And somebody said this to me recently that just being active or just taking part not only helps your community, but helps yourself, helps your own. And it's definitely sort of, like you say, it makes you feel less useless about it all, I guess, especially in these kind of turbulent times. I guess it gives people some sort of hope and feels like they're part of something.
Yeah, and I think there's something about feeling connected, which is absolutely essential. And right now, we feel very disconnected. So Roots is all about connecting you to someone that you probably wouldn't have met before and hopefully finding common ground. And right now, I think that lack of connection, we've got people looking at our leaders and just going, you can't do this. You can't do this. You know, our leaders don't seem to have the empathy and compassion needed to heal this country. And so people are maybe stepping into, I'm going to try and do something myself, as opposed to waiting for it to come down from on high, which to me is a very kind of healthy way for us to be moving.
And we'll be back with Ruth in a minute. But first, there's no middle bit this week because I am so tired. So just have this advert, which will either be something brilliant or terrible government propaganda that I slagged off in the first 10 minutes, or there won't be an advert and you'll just get this really weird, eerie break where you can just maybe contemplate death.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And now, yes, it was a lot to think about, wasn't it? Back to Ruth. Yeah, definitely. Very healthy. I mean, we're speaking just days after Boris Johnson has said humbug to, another MP talking about the murder of Joe Cox. It's all been very divisive this past week. I mean, do you feel like the, and from maybe what you've seen in the programme, do you feel like the divisive language of politicians is having a direct effect on the way people think and act? Because I find it quite hard to work out if big newspaper headlines are feeding people directly or if it's a longer kind of trickier process that, or maybe it's just making people miserable.
I think I watched the House of Commons this week and I was just depressed and appalled, but maybe not as appalled as ever. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. And I think it's reflecting how the country, there is a lot of divisive language going on. Our media, I mean, look at the newspaper headlines, we need to, as a country, put a full stop and just say, this is not who we are. And if it is who we are, it's not who we want to be. And until we get that, until we actually have a sign-off on that from our politicians, from our media, from our leaders, from our communities, saying we're not travelling down this road, it's going to continue. It's going to continue. And there is very little moral or courageous leadership demonstrated in the House of Commons. And that's what I found profoundly depressing. I've worked with young people my whole life, and to feel that they're watching this and thinking, wow, these are the people at the top.
Yeah, it doesn't sort of create, I don't know, I always think that teachers must be having a really hard time right now, sort of talking to kids going, if you don't stop misbehaving, you'll end up as Prime Minister, probably.
Yeah.
It's interesting as well that you mentioned the kind of privilege element earlier. Obviously, the UK's had class divides for many years. It's been a big issue. But is Brexit now kind of, making people ignore the other issues that are causing divisions? Because everything now is either leave or remain. But as you said, people are talking about their communities and about other aspects in which their lives might be different. Do you think that Brexit is kind of obscuring other issues that are perhaps growing and becoming more of a problem because of it?
Yeah, I think Brexit's becoming, that's become the fault lines on which we measure everything in this country. And, it masks the fact that a lot of this was there before, that I'm a black woman and I sometimes roll my eyes when there's tweets about kind of, Brexit caused racism in the UK. No, I'm not saying that Brexit hasn't exacerbated some of it and also allow people to step out and feel they can speak boldly about things. But, Tommy Robinson and his friends didn't emerge on the day of Brexit. There were people being shouted at in the street and people being abused well before that vote. But I think it's allowed people now to put everything onto Brexit, which masks the fact that actually a lot of what caused Brexit was happening well before that. And it's also allowed us to maybe not spend time unpicking some of the causes of discontent that led to Brexit. You know, it's a small thing, but I spend 2 days a week in London. And every time I come back, I'm furious at the disparity in my transport provision in Yorkshire and what I get since I step off in Euston. And I'm incandescent with rage about the fact that we are absolutely fed nonsense about our transport infrastructure in the north compared to what happens in London. Now, that's just one example. But I think the unfairness that people feel about their lives, and also whether it's fair or misplaced that London gets far more than the rest of the country, would just papered over that. And I think that work needs to be done to look at that issue of fairness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Northern Powerhouse thing never really came through, did it?
Took off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we never really found our powerhouse.
No, not at all. Not at all, despite the supposed promises. And obviously, of course, at your programme, which does sound fantastic, and as I sort of mentioned, obviously it was caused by, you know, you started it because of Brexit, but it does feel very timely. It feels incredibly necessary right now. How can people get involved in it? You're in your pilot scheme at the moment. Are you sort of continuing to run things, or is there going to be a new set of groups coming up? How do people take part, and how can they help you grow?
That's a good question. So we're looking at the moment, we've got 24 people going through our pilot programme, so that'll be completed by November. And then we're looking for another cohort of about 50 people to take part in the next phase. So we're asking people to step forward, put themselves forward as participants. We want people who are curious and compassionate and can listen deeply and are interested in learning about other people. I think Brexit has allowed a lot of people to have an entrenched viewpoint and to stick to that viewpoint and to shout louder and louder and louder about how they feel and how angry they are, whatever side they're on. And Roots Down is the opposite of that. It's going into an environment that's not yours and just being respectful and listening and then reflecting and being quiet and responsive to that. And to me, that feels like the complete opposite of what's going on. So we're asking people to step forward as participants. We're always looking for people to help fund us because crowdfunding got us to this stage. 9 funders turned us down and said, you know, we're not set up for this kind of work, which I find terrifying as well. I'm like, my God, if you're not set up for kind of healing the country, what on earth are you set up for? We just need support in terms of people coming forward as participants or supporters.
And there's you've got a big event going on October the 16th. Is that right? Can you tell me a bit more about what that is?
Yeah, we've got an event at Freud's in London on the 16th. Because what we found really interesting is loads of people from different regions across the country have put themselves up, especially from working-class communities, have put themselves up as participants. What we haven't had are London people who run businesses or are CEOs or are interested. And we need London to respond to this because it's no good kind of the rest of the country reaching out and London not reaching back. So we're holding an awareness event at Freud's 6 to 8 o'clock on the 16th of October. And we'd love for Londoners to come down and hear a bit more about this. You know, we want to connect with you.
Yeah. And it also amazes me, as you mentioned there, you know, we do hear all the extreme views online, whether it's Remain or Leave. And so many people I meet are very much in the middle and just a bit confused and just, you know, generally still want to have a chat. So important. And I wanted to ask, apart from your work, obviously, in the Roots programme, what else can people do if they're not taking part in your programme, if they're not one of the people that is you know, currently involved in the groups? What else can be done? What else are you kind of recommending people do in these kind of times to repair divisions?
Well, one of the things, I mean, there's a couple of organisations that are doing some really interesting work, like I mentioned. And I think the other thing that we're asking people to do, we set homework in Carol the Next Teacher, but we give people homework, you know, things like just for a week, get your news from a different source. Just for 1 week, you know, I didn't buy it because I couldn't do that, but I got my news from, I read what was being said on the Daily Mail for a week. And it was horrible, very traumatic for me, but it was important. Reading those comments and understanding what people, because none of my friends write things like that, none of the people that I care about would write things like that. But I feel that I have to educate myself on how other people in this country feel and live and what their priorities are. So we ask people to look at different news sources for a week. We ask people to go and visit different areas that they might not have been to before. We ask people to maybe go and visit people in their area or see if there's people who need visits and people who might need shopping things for them, just to do small acts that will make you feel much better because you feel like you're being active and taking part in your community, but also they help to bridge divide. So that's what we're asking people to do. There's also great organisations like Cares Family. They're an organisation that kind of pair off young professionals with the older community, and they do activities together. So they'd be a great one to look at. They're in lots of cities. And there's More in Common. So they, at the moment, doing a piece of research that's looking at kind of what the divides have been across the UK, and doing some really interesting research around that. But I think it's about starting local and doing it yourself, not relying on big organisations.
Thanks so much to Ruth for having time to talk to me. You can find the Roots Programme at rootsprogramme.org, where there is a link to the fundraiser under the support tab. They're also on Twitter at Programme Roots, and the same on Facebook too. The other links that Ruth recommends will be on the partlypoliticalbroadcast.co.uk website very soon. Do you know of any positive campaigns or people doing positive things to help scrapers out of this political quagmire? Or someone who can explain something about an issue that's largely being ignored thanks to all the Brexit shouting? Or an issue that I just haven't covered on the last 159 episodes of this podcast? Get in touch and let me know. Of course, you can do that by the contact page on the website, the @ParPolBro Twitter account, the Partly Political Broadcast group on Facebook, or email me on partlypoliticalbroadcast@gmail.com, preferably with a picture of your recommended interviewee written in Marmite across your walls, just so I know you're a true ally. And that's all for this week's slightly truncated Partly Political Broadcast podcast. And thank you to you and your ears, or whichever orifice you use to listen to this show with. I mean, who am I to judge? And if you do enjoy the show, or perhaps get a thrill from partaking in a whole hour of listening each week that you absolutely loathe, then why not recommend the show to someone you love or hate but want revenge on? Send them the website or podcast app links and give them a nudge to subscribe and have a listen. And if for some reason you want to go above and beyond the pod listener duty call sheet, then please also give the show a shiny review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to your episodes on. And if you can, do donate a few pennies or even pounds to the ko-fi.com/ParPolBro or patreon.com/ParPolBro pages. Thanks as always to Acast, my brother the Last Skeptic, who has yet another tune out called Scumbag Anthem, so do check that out, as I mentioned earlier, and to Cat Day, aka at Coracle Flask on Twitter, for the linear liner notes. This will be back next week when Johnson unveils his new plan to turn all of Ireland into one giant border that can only be crossed by passing a series of futuristic challenges that don't exist yet, but he remembers them from the film The Running Man, so it must be true. Bye! This week's show was sponsored by British Fruit, because, hey, we may as well use it for something.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.